From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Summer break is over for Congress. 5 weeks away, and today they're back with a whole lot to do in a hurry. The Iran nuclear deal, demands to defund Planned Parenthood. We could have a government shutdown. There's a big list of tough stuff. Not much record lately of cooperation. And the Pope is coming to town. This hour on Point, it's crunch time for the U.S. Congress. We'll talk with a couple of big senators and reporters on Capitol Hill. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Iran deal, Planned Parenthood, shutdown, highway deal. How would you vote, yay or nay? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Tough positions out there. July, President Obama announced the nuclear accord with Iran. He let Congress know that he welcomed robust debate, he said, but welcomed scrutiny of the details, he said. But he wasn't going, he said, to let Congress get in the way of an Iran nuclear deal.
I am confident that this deal will meet the national security interests of the United States and our allies. So I will veto any legislation that prevents the successful implementation of this deal.
Ready to veto. The Democrats say they have the votes to back that up. And on the spending front, conservative Republicans are saying if we don't cut funding for Planned Parenthood, change that whole scene, they are prepared to stop funding for the entire government. Here's Ted Cruz, Republican senator, of course, from Texas, presidential candidate, talking with Fox News on August 22nd.
We need to prosecute Planned Parenthood. And also, we need to cut off every penny of taxpayer funding. I'm leading the fight in the Senate to do exactly that and ensure that we are not funding people who are buying and selling body parts of unborn children in violation of federal criminal law.
And, of course, he's talking about that sting video where Planned Parenthood officials talk about the fetal tissue that they are selling to researchers. They say they haven't broken federal law. Cruz and others say they have and want to shut down that funding. We've got Republican majorities in both houses of Congress. My first guest among them, Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, sometimes moderate, sometimes tough. A lot of people pay attention to his moves. He joins us from his hometown of Mesa, Arizona. Senator Flake, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Hey,
Congress is back in session, Senator Flake. You're in Mesa. Are you playing hooky, sir?
I am actually driving to the airport as we speak.
Okay.
I'll be there.
Okay, fair enough. Can we go straight to the Iran nuclear deal? You were one of the last Republicans to come out and say you would oppose it. Many lined up before you. At this point, do you see any chance that Republicans will stop this deal going through?
No, I think the writing has been on the wall for a while. The president will have sufficient votes to sustain a veto, so it will go through.
What do you expect to hear in the debate this week?
Well, I some of the same themes that we've heard all along. This is a closer call than many want to admit. It really is a tough deal. You don't want to be on the other side of all of your allies. I think the agreement has significant shortcomings, but you have to look at the broader foreign policy implications, and that makes it a very tough call.
You did not come in with your opposition until the middle of August. What hung you up? Was it a close call for you?
It was. I said that I would take every opportunity to learn more about the agreement. So I attended every hearing and every classified briefing and other briefings, and also had conversations with administration officials. I had tried a number of times to convince the administration to move forward with parallel legislation, which would clarify some of the aspects that were a bit confusing about the agreement. If it were a treaty, we could do that with what are called RUDs, or you know, reservations, understandings, and declarations. But since it's an executive agreement, we didn't have that option.
And what ultimately turned you to the nay side, the negative on it?
You know, frankly, on the nuclear side, I think it's a net plus. But my concern is kind of institutional. I thought that it unwisely kind of tied the hands of Congress in terms of our ability to respond to non-nuclear behavior on Iran's part.
And you want Congress back in the middle of that. We'll hear a lot of that conversation this week on Capitol Hill, both sides, both houses of Congress. What about on the spending front? We just heard Ted Cruz there, I'm sure you heard it as well, saying we've got to cut all funding for Planned Parenthood, and you know that he and others would do that or shut the government down or threaten to anyway. Where do you see that going, Senator Flake?
Well, hopefully not towards the government shutdown. That never ends well. It doesn't serve conservative ends. We don't save money when we do it. It makes it difficult for agencies and groups to plan out there, and it just doesn't speak very well for Congress if we can't get our ducks in a row and keep the government funded.
Spending caps. Congress implemented them in 2011. The president says he wants to be done with them. They're these arbitrary caps. Republicans say, well, maybe we'll take them off the Defense Department, but nowhere else. Is it likely to be another continuing resolution, or is it time to take off those caps?
I think we'll have another continuing resolution, or CR, probably lasting 3 months or so. It's a lousy way to do business, but it's better than the alternative, shutting government down. We're going to need a long-term budget agreement, but you're not going to get that negotiated this fall.
When do we ever get it? What are the circumstances in which we might get past these arbitrary limits and get to a real, genuine conversation about spending?
Well, any genuine agreement that we have on spending has to get into entitlement spending, so-called mandatory spending. And that, you've just got to have cooperation between the White House and the Congress that we don't have enough of right now. Frankly, divided government tends to work best when it comes to a big long-term budget agreement, when you have both parties kind of buy in to a big agreement. But we just don't seem to have the right dynamic right now.
And so another continuing resolution. Who is it on Capitol Hill, within your party, who would shut the government down rather than fund Planned Parenthood? Ted Cruz seems to be in that number. What's the perspective that is being expressed there?
Well, there are a few. It's not just Ted Cruz. There are a number of people who believe that rather than it's a tough question of what actually funds Planned Parenthood or what actually funds abortion. There's already a prohibition on abortion funding from the federal government, but obviously the question remains, is that money fungible? And so this is a tough question for a lot of people, and I think that there will be moves to do so, but I don't think that they will prevail in the end. I think that we will keep the government open. We have a government shutdown about every 17 years. It comes with the cicadas in Washington, I think. And people tend to forget how bad it was the last time. It's a long time between government shutdowns, but I think we've had the last one for a while.
Senator Flake, you'll be right in the middle of this as soon as you get to the airport there in Arizona and head off to Washington. How do you see the presidential campaign, which is already well underway, affecting the debate on the tone on Capitol Hill?
Well, I mentioned it'll be tough to get a long-term budget agreement. It's tough to get any real agreement, whether it's immigration reform or any of the big items that we need when there's a presidential debate going on. And these seem to start earlier, every cycle. And so it does impact the debate. We have a number of senators running for president, and that affects how debates happens on the floor.
Who's to blame for what has become something even worse or more than gridlock here in the Obama years? It just seems that the cooperation between the White House and Capitol Hill has gone almost to zero. Is that the fault of Republicans, the opposition party in Congress? Is it the fault of the White House and President Obama?
I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I think both on the Republican side and the Democratic side, we've in the media, the 24-hour news cycle and social media tends to play up the differences and make it more difficult to get together. But whatever the case, we certainly have had a lot of gridlock.
The Pope will be standing before you and all the other members of Congress quite soon. He has had a tough message on capitalism itself. On many fronts, on the environment, seems to be kind of in opposition to the Republican agenda. How will GOP members of Congress deal with that when the pontiff is in Washington?
Well, I know that he's looked up to by a lot of people, as a religious figure and a man of faith. I certainly look forward to his address, to the joint session. I've appreciated his role in the new policy we have toward Cuba, for example. He was instrumental in bringing that about, and I've appreciated a lot of what he has said about immigration reform. I think that Republicans and Democrats would be wise to heed some of the advice he has, particularly on dealing with this issue in a humane way.
Donald Trump says build a wall. You were on record early on saying that was not a good idea, but he continues to gain in the polls. What about build a wall now? You're the U.S. Senator from Arizona, one of the two. How do you like that advice?
Obviously, we need better border security. In some places, that means a wall. In some places, that means a fence. In some places, that means just surveillance. But the notion that we're going to build a wall and have the Mexican government pay for it is just a bit unrealistic.
What do you find among Arizona voters on that front? Donald Trump is clearly finding voters elsewhere around the country who support that attitude, that posture.
I think in Arizona we understand the complexity of the issue, that you not only need border security, you need interior enforcement, you need meaningful and robust temporary worker programs, and you need an effective mechanism to deal with those who are here illegally now. None of which has been adequately addressed by Mr. Trump.
Senator Flake, we've just got a second. Should the U.S. be taking migrants, never mind Mexico, should they be taking migrants, refugees out of Syria in the current crisis?
I would hope that we would be able to take take some more to see that tragedy unfolding. I don't know how we can sit back and just rely on other countries to do this when we could do more ourselves, yes.
We'll look at that in more depth tomorrow right here. U.S. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona on his way to the airport, headed back to Washington like a whole lot of other congressmen and women and senators. Senator Flake, thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona. We're looking at the big list of heavyweight items in front of Congress this fall right now. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the big list of heavyweight items in front of Congress this fall. It's got a lot to do in a short time on Iran, on spending, and a whole lot more. We've got a couple of top correspondents on Capitol Hill who will join us in a moment. We just heard from Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, who a lot of people pay close attention to when it comes to foreign policy and a whole lot more. I'm going to turn to another senator, Democrat, out of Florida, whose position on the Iran deal was very important last month. Democratic Senator Bill Nelson joins us from Washington, considered one of a handful of Democratic senators who were key on the Iran deal. His support was not obvious, but he came out in support of it on August 4th. He joins us as Congress comes back into session. Senator Nelson, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be with you.
You said when you decided to support the Iran nuclear deal that you would vote in favor of the deal, quoting you, unless there is an unexpected change in the conditions and facts. Do you see a change? Are you solid for the deal? Will you help uphold a presidential veto if it comes to that?
Yes, I will. There has been no change in the facts over the course of the August recess, and I will cast my vote in favor of the Iranian joint nuclear agreement.
What do you expect to hear in the debate this week? Senators are asking to actually be in the chamber, which these days can be kind of rare, to hash this thing out, at least rhetorically this week. What do you expect to hear, Senator Nelson?
Well, I think a lot of senators will be there because I think although most have now made up their mind, there's only a handful. And I think in your previous interview, I heard just a snippet of it at the beginning with Jeff Flake.
Yes.
Who is a good friend, and he's a good senator. And interestingly, he said as he concluded on the nuclear deal, he thought that it did what it needed to do on the nuclear. He has other reasons to oppose it. Well, my reasons for supporting it is exactly that it is a joint agreement to prevent Iran from having a nuclear bomb. I think at the very least, it prevents Iran from developing a bomb within 10, at the very least, 10 years, 15, 20, 25 years. And therefore, I think it accomplishes what we set out to do, and Iran with a nuclear weapon is a huge threat to the interest of the United States, our allies, especially Israel. And I think with all the safeguards in it, with all of the immediate access to the three declared sites, with the ability to go after them if they try to develop one and cheat in a covert site, I think this is in the best interest of the United States and Israel.
Senator Nelson, as you know very well, over the weekend we saw Senator Cardin out of Maryland, a Jewish member of the Senate, come out in opposition, Democrat, in opposition to this deal. We saw the Democratic Party chairwoman and your colleague out of Florida, Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, on Sunday saying she would support the deal and President Obama. Of course, we had Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, standing right there in Congress saying, don't do this. This is a disaster. You come from a state with a significant population of Jewish voters. What have you heard from them? And what kind of consequences do you think you may face supporting this deal?
The Jewish community in America is split. The organization AIPAC is very hard over against this agreement. And with a lot of emotion and passion because they think that Israel is threatened. Interestingly, the former head of Mossad and the former head of Shin Bet, which are the two intelligence agencies of the state of Israel, have come out in favor of the deal. So there is a genuine disagreement in perspective and a disagreement in a matter of conscience. My question for me is, what's in the interest of the United States and our allies? And it is very clear that this joint agreement, unless Iran cheats, will prevent a nuclear weapon from being developed for 10, 15, 20 years, and the world is going to be a very different place. And if they cheat, we've got all the apparatus in place. We are going to catch them, and we will have all the options on the table that are available to us today, including our allies supporting us in reimposing these economic sanctions that have hurt Iran, that brought them to the table in the first place.
Senator Bill Nelson is with us, Democrat of Florida, in Washington today. Senator Nelson, just this morning, your fellow Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Democrat, says he will oppose the nuclear deal with Iran. There has been some hope in the White House and State Department that you would have enough Democrats supporting the deal, that there would be a filibuster. It wouldn't have to come to a veto. Now, Senator Cardin says no to the deal. Senator Manchin says no to the deal. Democrats, is there any hope of a filibuster at this point, or is it inevitable that it goes to the veto, sir?
Well, that's four Senate Democrats that have opposed the deal. And as of right now, there are 38 that support it. So if three more Senate Democrats come out in favor of the joint agreement, that means it's 41, and that means that you cannot proceed because of a motion for cloture would not prevail. It needs 60 votes under the Senate rules.
May we move to spending? Do you see a shutdown coming? Ted Cruz says no to Planned Parenthood funding, even if it goes to a shutdown. This Republican leadership says no, thank you. Where do you see the appetite there?
I don't think there's an appetite in the Senate Republican caucus for another shutdown. The last one a couple of years ago hurt them terribly. From a not only a policy but also a political standpoint. So I think that our Senate colleagues, our friends in the Republican caucus, I didn't hear Jeff Flake's comments on this, But I wouldn't be surprised if they're not doing everything they can to get Ted Cruz not to do the attempted shutdown of the government.
Of course, we know he's not an easy man to shut down on that front. It looks like some of that effort will go forward in any case. Senator Nelson, it's been terrific speaking with you today. We wish you good luck in the session ahead, and we thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Have a great day.
You too, there in Washington. Senator Bill Nelson, Democrat of Florida. We are talking about the big list of big items in front of Congress this fall. A lot to do and not very many days in which to do it. Hearing there from Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, Democratic Senator Bill Nelson of Florida. Over the weekend, it was Florida Congresswoman Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who also heads up the DMC, the Democratic Party leadership there, saying she would vote in favor of the nuclear deal with Iran. Jake Tapper asked her on CNN's State of the Union what she would say to her Jewish constituents who believe it's the wrong move.
I am confident that the process I've gone through to reach this decision is one that will ensure that Israel will be there forever. It is the homeland of my people. I'm an American citizen, and I believe fervently in protecting America's national security interests. And there is no way that we would be able to ensure that better than approving this deal.
An emotional Debbie Wasserman Schultz, congressperson out of Florida there over the weekend, saying she will go with the nuclear deal. Let's hear from a couple of people who know the issues on the Hill very well. Kelsey Snell joins us right now, covers Congress for The Washington Post and joins us from Washington. Kelsey, thank you for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Bob Cusack is here, editor-in-chief of The Hill newspaper there on Capitol Hill, covering all things Congress. Bob Cusack, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Tom.
Very, very fraught debate all through the summer on the Iran nuclear deal. At this point, Bob, do you see a path to filibuster that's still viable? Might this come through without a presidential veto?
Well, the deal is definitely going to go through because Obama has the votes as far as overriding a veto. He's going to win this. But the big question is, can it get to his desk? Will there be enough votes in the Senate that basically they won't be able to overcome the filibuster, Republicans? And I think there's certainly some senators who are out there who are undecided. Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia.
But he's saying this morning no to the deal, I guess.
He's saying no. Okay, so well, then that gets it to a few others, like Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
There are others, Gary Peters from Michigan. I think that's the big battle right now, because Republicans would love to get the measure to President Obama's desk. Of course, he would veto it, and the president's going to win this. The Iran deal is going to go through, but that would be a big victory for Republicans if they could just get it to his desk. And that's really up in the air right now, especially with Manchin's vote.
Kelsey Snell, how unusual is it for Congress to cordon off a big chunk of time to debate something like this? The Senate is asking senators all to be in the chamber to hear this debate. What's the atmosphere likely to be created?
You know, it is slightly unusual to ask the entire Senate to be present, though I think it sends a very strong message about how seriously they're taking this.
I sort of like it. I mean, I wish we debated more things that way, where people were really there listening to each other and hashing it through as far as that goes.
Yeah, you know what? You start to see these call to arms type debates when it's something that members are going to be asked about their vote a lot in the future. You saw this with Obamacare. It becomes a kind of signature vote for many of these members, and it's important that they be there in person to watch it all happen. And it sends a message to the president as well, you know, that the Senate is not going to take this lightly or not going to step aside. They're asserting their power in some ways.
How does it play out for the GOP after all the heat and thunder here, even the Prime Minister of Israel right there, and now they can't stop it? Did they ever think they would?
You know, I think that it became increasingly clear that they couldn't stop it. And it would be very difficult, I think, for Republicans to put themselves in the position where the president has worked out a deal with so many other countries, and then for the Congress to basically give him a vote of no confidence and not stand with him. They don't want to support the deal, but it's also a much bigger issue than just what happens inside of those four walls.
Kelsey Snell, Bob Cusack, stand by. Lots of callers have been piling up as we spoke with the senators here. Shalom is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Shalom, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
I have one central point in three parts. First of all, Iran's president and supreme leader announced several times that Israel has to be destroyed. This deal permits this to happen in 10 to 15 years from now. It's like delayed, suspended death sentence on Israel.
I mean, that's not what John Kerry and the president say, but all right, so what, Shalom?
The second part is there is a concept in the Shiite tradition called taqiyya. In that is the right to lie to infidels or even to Sunnis, to lie, to say lies to it.
Shalom, I've got to ask you to take us to your bottom line. What should happen here?
The Congress should pass a resolution that this deal permits genocide of Israel and destruction of the Jewish people, and anybody who supports that deal is knowingly or unintentionally enabling the destruction of Israel, of the Jewish people, and that the United States is not going to be party to genocide.
Shalom, I appreciate your call. Bob Cusack, I mean, the issues here from the perspective of someone like Shalom are as big as they could be when it comes to Israel's very existence. What happens to all the passion that's been packed into this debate, this issue? Where's it go?
Well, Tom, this is going to be a historic vote. It's going to be an emotional vote. Lawmakers who have been undecided have heard a lot from their constituents, both pro and against. So this is something that you're going to look back years from now, and it's going to be on the record. And whether they're yes or no, it could really be either a benefit to their political careers or not. And of course, a lot of the members, they're not thinking that way in particular.
There 10 years thinking, is a long time in political terms.
It is. And so they're trying to think, is this the best deal? Is this the best way to go? And of course, we don't know who the next president is going to be. And if it's a Republican, this deal likely is shattered because all the Republican candidates have criticized this deal.
Kelsey, is the next president not bound in any way after all this negotiation and five plus, you know, P5 plus the U.S. at the table? Nothing binding a next president?
You know, the next president could definitely take steps to unwind this. And
it's not a formal treaty. It's an executive action.
Right. As an executive action, it's a choice being made by this president with the expectation and the hope that there's political consequences to undoing something that's been on the books and has been operational for over a year by the time somebody new comes in.
So, Bob, can you really see this a year from now being just turned around, or a year and a half?
Oh, no, I definitely think so, because if you have a commander-in-chief who that's going to be on his or her, depending on who the next president is, that's a top issue. And Hillary Clinton supports the deal, but there's no doubt about it. If the commander-in-chief is a Republican, this deal, I think, will evaporate, and he or she, Carly Freeman, is in the race on the Republican side, will rip it up, and that will be a top priority, no doubt about it.
Kelsey, that makes the presidential election yet another referendum on the Iran nuclear deal.
Yeah, it becomes a lasting and, as Bob said, it's very emotional. And I think that it's not something that we're going to see disappear once they cast these votes in the coming weeks.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the big list of heavyweight items in front of Congress this fall, back from summer recess today, 5 weeks away, and they are back in Washington with a lot to do in a short time on Iran, on spending, and a whole lot more. Bob Cusack is with us. Editor-in-Chief of The Hill joins us from Washington. Kelsey Snell is here, covers Congress for The Washington Post. The Iran nuclear deal will be the first item of business this week, and then right after it gets into spending issues. There is the threat of government shutdown in some Republican quarters over funding for Planned Parenthood. In his weekly address on Saturday, President Obama called on Congress to pass a budget, avoid another government shutdown.
At a time when the global economy faces headwinds and America's economy is a relative bright spot in the world, a shutdown of our government would be wildly irresponsible. It would be an unforced error that saps the momentum we've worked so hard to build.
But it has happened before. Senate leadership, Mitch McConnell, wouldn't like to have it. Just a day after adjourning for the August recess at a news conference, said no government shutdown. Here, Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell.
We'll fund the government. I can't tell you what will finally end up in or out of any government funding resolution. I can tell you without fear of contradiction, there will be no government shutdown.
There will be no government shutdown. Kelsey, is the math that clear?
I would put the odds of a government shutdown pretty low. I think that McConnell has the power and the ability to make sure that the CR that he'd like to pass goes through. He seems very
the continuing set. Resolution, which is what they
yes.
have instead of a real budget agreement.
Yeah, the idea is that a CR, a continuing resolution, will buy them time to negotiate a broader budget deal. And while Ted Cruz and potentially Rand Paul would like to hold up that process, it's not entirely clear to me that they have the political clout that they may have had the last time around.
Bob Cusack, walk us through the timetable on the spending front here. What are the deadlines? If it's a continuing resolution, if it's a real, if it should be a real deal that lifts spending caps, mm-hmm. What's it look like?
Well, we have to have some type of deal by the end of September or there will be a government shutdown. I mean, if Congress was a football player, it would be a punter. Congress is very good at punting and kicking the can down the road. And that's what we're looking at with this continuing resolution, basically keep funding levels as is. But there's a little bit different dynamic this mm-hmm. time around, and it is the Planned Parenthood. So any continuing resolution would fund Planned Parenthood, and the 2016 White House hopefuls on the Republican side are going to rip Mitch McConnell, are going to rip John Boehner. A lot of conservatives won't vote for that, so Republican leaders are going to need Democratic votes. It's going to be a very hectic fall for the GOP. Shutdown politics always favors the Democrats. So I think it's a very difficult autumn for Mitch McConnell. Remember, McConnell is trying to preserve a narrow Senate majority, and that's why he's trying to get out in front and saying, listen, there's going to be no shutdown. He wants to retain the majority in 2016. A lot more Republicans are up this time around in 2016 in purple and blue states than Democrats. So a lot on the line for Mitch McConnell. He knows he's going to take some heat from the 2016 White House hopefuls, but he wants to keep the Senate in Republican hands, and that's going to be a challenge, especially if the government is shut down.
His thinking there that a shutdown would cost Republicans in the polls and potentially even lose the GOP, the Senate majority.
Absolutely. And Mitch McConnell is trying to make the case, listen, the Senate is working again. We passed a big Medicare bill a while back. We passed a transportation bill. Of course, that hasn't passed the House. But we're getting things done. We passed a TPA, the trade measure that both President Obama and most Republicans supported. So he does not want to have this on the legacy of this Senate. He does not want to shut down. So that would hurt his cause.
Here's McConnell, Mitch McConnell on Kentucky's WYMT last week saying, look, the way it works, this isn't going to happen this time out on Planned Parenthood and defunding.
The way you make a law in this country, the Congress has to pass it and the president has to sign it. The president's made it very clear he's not going to sign any bill that includes defunding of Planned Parenthood. So that's another issue that awaits a new president, hopefully with a different point of view about Planned Parenthood.
Mitch McConnell, majority leader in the Senate. Kelsey Snell, on the House side, there is yet again talk of Republicans booting John Boehner, just as he has his kind of moment of glory. He's wanted a papal visit for a long time, and now he's got one coming, of course, famously a Roman Catholic. What about that, you know, Boehner move in the House, Kelsey?
You know, that move by Congressman Mark Meadows was pretty shocking to basically everybody watching that. Though, you know, there's been this rising sense of anti-establishment feelings from Republicans in both the House and the Senate. And there's a significant wing of the party that wants to assert themselves and, you know, make it very clear to leadership that their behavior is not going to fly with voters all over the country. I think that you probably won't see House Speaker John Boehner lose his gavel. I mean, I would venture to guess that this may become a bigger push as members are returning, and the very strong fervor for presidential candidate Trump gives them a sense that they are right to be pushing against the establishment, and that, you know, there's a voter base out there that to be captured, and there are supporters who will allow them to keep going. But I don't think the way the structure of the House is that it's likely that Boehner will lose his gavel.
Steve in Austin, Texas. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom. So it seems to me like a prerequisite for serving in the Senate should be you know how to count, and that, you know, they are wasting all this time on show votes that go nowhere and not conducting the people's business. We don't have infrastructure. They can't really put a budget together. We've got continuing resolutions. And instead, we have debates on bogus Planned Parenthood videos, and nothing gets accomplished for the American people.
Show votes, even once the real vote is in hand, of course. I mean, I guess who knew on the Iran nuclear deal? There was a strong move to try and change it. But, Bob, what about if you look at the Congress over time? Are we in a more of a showboating era?
Well, certainly Republicans want to have votes that appease their base, and that is repealing the Affordable Care Act. Of course, they've done it dozens of times, and it has no shot of actually becoming law until there is a new president. So there has been a lot of show votes, but a lot of conservatives want to have those show votes. But I think it's a decent point. I mean, you look at this, we're coming back into Congress now, Congress getting back into town. We're nowhere as far as funding levels or any type of an agreement. We have the Jewish holidays coming up, very few legislative days between now and the end of the month. So we are headed for another possible shutdown, and we got the debt limit crisis. That's going to have to be raised in the months ahead. We have a transportation deadline coming up as well. So Congress just is addicted to these deadlines, and they don't get anything done until they're right up against them. And you can make a very good case. Why aren't these guys talking more over the summer so that when they come down, it's not a race against the clock?
I mean, Kelsey, there is the widespread view out there that it is all posturing now and not a Congress that's really at grips with the nation's long-term challenges or even its immediate challenges. Pave the roads.
Yeah, the highway funding is a big question mark still. And I think that there is frustration with the way the system works, but it's not entirely clear to me that members see a way out of it. I think the deadlines force them to negotiate and force leaders to come to a table, and then they can go to the members who are in part of this anti-establishment wave and say, you know, I tried, I stood as long as I could, but in the end, we just have to do something. And it's I think that it's a fair criticism that it doesn't look like an effective way to run things, and it really isn't an effective way to run things. It's not clear to me, though, that there is a solution on the horizon.
And yet the challenges are real. It's not a joke. Being a country and helping run it. David in Woodbury, Connecticut. David, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Tom, everybody. The last Republican shutdown of October 1st to 16th in 2013 cost 800,000 layoffs, federal employee layoffs, 200,000 related private employee layoff, cost the economy $24 billion, close all the national parks and monuments, spoiling vacations, especially of foreign travelers. And Republicans, I don't think you're going to do it again.
Mitch McConnell says no. David, I appreciate your call. Bob Cusick, Is it possible that we're going to have this shutdown threat more than once this fall? We have to do something by the end of this month just to keep a continuing resolution going. And then there's the debt ceiling, which needs raising again. Could there be more than one bite at the apple of shutdown?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They could basically reach some type of temporary agreement for 2 weeks or a month, and then we're in this situation again. They're not able to reach a deal. And the other wrinkle is the 2016 politics, because remember, you have the outsiders who are doing very well on the Republican side, and that's Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, and of course, Donald Trump. And all those candidates are going to go after Republican leaders in Congress. They have no political incentive to back John Boehner and back Mitch McConnell when they're trying to get a bipartisan deal. And of course, on the left, you're going to have Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton criticizing Republican leaders in Congress. So that's why this is a huge test of leadership for John Boehner. As Kelsey mentioned, you know, that he is facing an insurrection on his right. Who knows if this is his last term as Speaker? And of course, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who wants to remain Majority Leader, not Minority Leader.
DeMarcus in Franklin, Tennessee. DeMarcus, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say here to you about the Senate coming back, or most of the senators coming to debate the Iran nuclear deal. I'm in favor of that deal, but I'm like you. I really do like it when our representatives or senators actually are there at the legislature and doing, I think, their job and listening and debating so people can tune in and hear all sides, the emotions, the logic, the arguments here and there about stuff. I think this is a deal that needs to be debated. I think all stuff this big needs to be debated. So I just wanted to affirm your comment earlier that you really like it when the Senate is there debating and it's not just an empty chamber of people talking to C-SPAN cameras.
I guess what I'm pushing for there or supporting is real engagement and not just posturing. I don't know if we'll get to real engagement, but maybe the pressure of having everybody around and watching and listening may push in that direction. DeMarcus, I appreciate your call. I mean, Kelsey, it is so common now, especially in the Senate, to have more or less an empty chamber and just somebody yapping away.
Yeah, you do see that a lot. You see it a lot in the House as well. Though there are other ways that they engage, not just there on the floor. I think that the committee process is really important still. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to get all of the members together in that chamber because, you know, when they're not in a committee hearing or in their office, they're also frequently out raising money for their next campaign. So yeah. it's a strange dynamic up there.
Justin in Estherville, Iowa. Justin, thank you for calling. You're on.
My point that I wanted to make is that in 08, Obama's quoted as saying that basically Bush was making a power grab for the executive branch and that he vowed to reverse that if he became president. And he's not doing that. He's just making more of a power grab.
Are you sympathetic? I mean, he would say, I suppose, Congress won't work with me on anything. We can't afford paralysis. I have to act. So, yes, I'm going to executive action. What would you make of that?
That's not his job. Mm-hmm. His job is not to do Congress's job. His job is to keep Congress in check. Congress's job is to keep him in check. They don't want to do that. He just wants to write executive orders. Say, you're not doing your job, I'm going to. Well, that's not his job.
Justin, I appreciate your call. Bob Cusack, Iran deal, on the environment we've seen a lot. On any number of fronts, the president is certainly moving aggressively with executive action. How does it look constitutionally to you, and how does it look in terms of the durability of those policies he's pushing?
Well, as far as durability, it's going to be easy for a Republican to reverse some of this if a Republican wins in 2016. I think one of the things that you talk to Republicans that they're most upset about is the climate change action because remember in 2009, 2010, we had a Democratic Congress. President Obama wanted the Congress to pass climate change legislation. They were unable to do so. They got it through the House, through Nancy Pelosi's whip counting. And then it stalled in the Senate, died in the Senate. And now, of course, the president's moving forward on administrative actions on climate change. So whether it's a Republican administration or a Democratic administration, though, they all usurp power from Congress. And that has been happening for decades. And certainly the executive branch is far more powerful than the legislative branch.
And the Pope coming before the end of this month. John Boehner, very happy about that. He said for a kid growing up, going to Mass every morning, it's a pretty humbling experience. Kelsey, what do you expect when the Pope stands up there? He is called the excesses of capitalism, the dung of the devil. He has come out very strongly in favor of moves on the environment as Republicans are looking to, get in the way of what the president's pushing on that front. Is it going to be uncomfortable for the GOP with this Pope Francis at the lectern?
You know, it might be uncomfortable for some. I think his message, he doesn't appear to be the type of person who backs down from a message that is uncomfortable for people to hear. But I think that the reception will be just as warm whether or not they agree with him on 100% of his policy statements. And, you know, it may be that it becomes less about policy and more about the church itself.
First time ever to see a pope addressing a joint session of Congress. John Boehner, at Mass every morning as a boy, has said it will be respectful no matter what, but it could be a tough moment for some ideologues in the GOP. Kelsey Snell with The Washington Post, it's terrific to have you with us. Come again.
Thank you so much. I'd love to come back.
And Bob Cusack, editor-in-chief of The Hill, newspaper on Capitol Hill. Bob, wonderful to have you. Good luck covering it all this fall.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. You can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm there on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.